best racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back at Keeneland, and second half here on the weekend preview, the Twin Spires weekend preview for Breeders' Cup, which makes it extra special. And I should mention, actually, we got Scott Schaap, so we can let Scott do the promos and talk about what's available at Twin Spires for players, including the bet back, second and third place bet backs, and then of course all the handicapping information. And we've availed ourselves of a lot of that. Vance Hansen and Scully yesterday, Kelly Riley on Wednesday, and now Scott Shapiro, who joins us. Schaap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy Breeders' Cup.
And to you, and best of luck. And I don't know how much of that you heard of the intro side of things, but let's first of all let everybody know what they can, what help they can get at Twin Spires.
Yeah, I mean, the main promo for the Breeders' Cup is the Money Back special. I think I heard you kind of towards the tail end, but yep, just to make sure everybody got it. Up to $10 back if your horse runs second or third. And make sure, as always, to opt into the promotion. And these will be refunded quickly, the qualifying bets. It'll be credited within 2 hours instead of waiting till Monday morning. So you'll have the money to fire right back. So again, the money back promotion for all races, not just the Breeders' Cup, not just tomorrow, not just today, every race at Keeneland this weekend.
Outstanding. And then, of course, there's the handicapping capsules. There's been all the write-ups that we've referred to. And there's still, I mean, still plenty of time. I mean, some people actually will not, you know, play heavily today. They might dabble a little bit. They might just watch and see how the track's playing and that kind of thing. And so, you know, the ultimate, the $25 for the Grisnet Ultimate Breeders' Cup Handicapping Package, very much still available and very much still invaluable.
Hey, Steve, it's Steve Hammer here. Good to talk to you. I was gonna say, Scott.
What's up, Hammer? How you doing?
Everything's good. People might say they're not going to bet a lot today. And we've all said that going in, oh, I'm going to save till tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And once you get going, you hit one early or, you know, you, whatever it goes on. I put in an early pick four, an early pick five because I knew we were going to be busy. You know, that thing starts rolling and then you start covering. You know, good intentions sometimes don't always make it. But, you know, if you're going to pick 2 days to go, these are the 2 days. And I'm anxious to hear your opinions for sure.
Yeah, no doubt, Hammer. I think taking a middle road is best. Maybe your strongest opinions are tomorrow. Save, you know, don't blow all your budget. I know I've been there in my 20s, used to blow all my money too early. But at the same point, you know, having some action today, these are some great races, and hope to have some success.
Well, Shap, let's talk about that. And actually, Fanny Semo, Fanny, are you going to be around? I'm going to grab you in a couple of minutes. All right.
Okay.
All right.
I don't think you can say that anymore.
What? Well. Fanny Simone is going to join us in about 10 minutes, all right? Outstanding. That's tremendous to catch Fanny. Shap, I mean, give everybody your general approach and your bankroll application before we talk some selections.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm mindful of at the Breeders' Cup as much or more than any time else is putting too much of my budget into horizontal wagers. You know, I'm a big pick five, pick four, pick six type of guy, but it's that much more difficult over these races, especially with some horses from Europe coming over that I don't know as well as I do, you know, the American-based horses. So while I will play pick fives and pick fours throughout the weekend, I definitely, where I have stronger opinions, want to make sure I'm making win bets on those horses that I think are overlays, and even more importantly, playing vertical wagers. So if I'm right once or twice during the course of the weekend, I can still come out ahead instead of, you know, relying on being not wrong or right many more races. So I think that is a big key on Breeders' Cup and a big key for what I'm going to do today and tomorrow with my budget.
All right. Well, and out of curiosity, how much do you set aside for this day?
In terms of a budget?
Yeah.
I come up with a couple $1,000s
yeah.
for the day, which
yeah.
is generally pretty big for me. You know, I mean, I'll play some bigger tickets along the way, but I think that and probably about a quarter of that budget is for today. Maybe if I have some early success, I'll up a little more of that for the later races. But that's probably about what I have. So.
And you know, it's funny because I'm gonna forget a regular friend on Twitter asked last night, It's funny. I've asked that question more this week than I think I ever have, and I'm not even sure why. But I do think that it helps players, you know, of a certain experience level. You know, if they know what others are spending, it increases their comfort level. You know, in terms of what you know what they're going to apply. And I'll make 2 points on this. You know, one is to segregate today and tomorrow, and like Scott just said, and as we've heard, you know, from countless people over the years, you make sure you have got money put aside for your favorite, your strongest opinions. You know, you are not going to want to get to the mile, let's say, tomorrow, you know, with four races left, and 70% of your budget or 80% of your budget has disappeared. You haven't cashed a ticket, or if you have, it's a modest one. And then all of a sudden you don't have what you really felt you needed. And then I'll make a second corollary to that. Before things even start today, take maybe 10%, 15% of what you expect to spend and put it somewhere safe as action bets. Because one thing that happens on these 2 days that you don't count on, there's going to be horses that you eliminated because you said, I can't really take that horse at 8-1. And then you look up at the board and they're 18-1. And you don't have it mentally in your in your budget to then peel off, let's say, even a $20 win bet. So make sure you've got a little pin money, a back pocket money, boot money for those board watching plays where you say, oh my God, how am I not, I've got to do something with this horse at 27-1, because you never expected the horse to be that price. And at the very least, it's a saver. So I would peel off about 10-15% of your anticipated expenses for action bets.
No, that's good advice, however you want to put it, because this day is a little unique in terms of overlay prices on horses that you just aren't, you know, you're going to be surprised by. And I would recommend in general being a little more flexible than you might be in other days. Sure, you're going to want to have some stuff mapped out or a general idea, but being flexible to the way the board is playing is certainly something that I think is good advice.
There we go. All right. Very quickly then, Scott, because most listeners are anticipating listening to this later for the Saturday opinion, so that's where we'll spend the most time. But how about a quick rundown of the things you like today?
Today, okay. Starting in race two, just quickly I'll run through a couple quick picks with very quick points. Race two, I like number 10, Affirmative Lady, over number 3, Indy Again. I think both are second-time starters, have big moves to move forward here. I thought Affirmative Lady ran much better than even the running line suggests. At first, asking for Graham Motion, so I'm going to lean on her in the second. In the fourth, I like number 11, Trace Solace. I know his win wasn't as eye-popping as Arabian Lion or maybe even Protege, but I thought having to work did him well. Reagan, who we'll see tomorrow, who he beat way back to the rest, I thought Reagan has a good shot to run well tomorrow, so that's a horse that I like in here, Trace Solace in the fourth. And then in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, I'm going to build trifecta wagers, keying number 3, Private Creed, in all three slots, 12-1 for Steve Asmussen. Not sure if he's going to be good enough to win it, but I see a lot of speed here. He's been honest. He's moving in the right direction. Has a win over this course, and I think he's going to run his race. And then in race 7, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, the race I'm most looking forward to from a betting perspective today. I like two horses in here, which I'll build my wagers around. The New York bred, number 2, You're My Girl, who I think will run big here in her third career start for John Terranova. And then Chop Chop, who had all sorts of trouble, well-documented trouble in the Grade 1 Alcibiades. She appears to be doing well. She took well to the main track. I like You're My Girl and Chop Chop in the Juvenile Fillies.
They're my second and third plays with Atomically as a price.
That's my third pick.
Well, then,
all right, let's hit it.
There you go. There's we're on board. I love it.
All right. On to Saturday?
You bet.
Okay. My first significant play in Saturday will come in the first Breeders' Cup race, and that's the Filly and Mare Sprint. I think this is a really good gambling event. I do think Goodnight Olive is the deserving favorite in here, and a horse that I'm very confident will run her race. I have no desire in trying to beat her, but I do have desire in trying to beat number 4, CC, last year's champ, that I just don't think is the same horse as she was a year ago. I'm going to leave her off all my tickets. And I ended up leaning on Obligatory as my top pick, Steve. I think the daughter of Curlin ran even better than the third place effort in the Ballerina when she was rolling when they turned for home and had to check and still regroup to finish third. I think that she's going to get a good setup in here. And then kind of my B horses after Obligatory and Goodnight Olive are going to be Echo Zulu, who I really like the outside draw for. I thought, you know, you're a Thoroughgraph user like myself. Not on a lot of other metrics, but a big step forward for her in the Dogwood, I think bodes well for her here, as well as number 1, Slammed, who I've been a fan of for some time now. The rail draw, not ideal in this spot, but at the price, I'm not willing to leave her off.
You know, the one thing, and Mike Welch is going to join us at about 11:40. When I got a chance to look at the Saturday clocker report, Echo Zulu, who we really did get the sense was you know, as difficult as it's been to get her to come to hand, it really does feel like she's ready. And, you know, the outside box, you know, depends on what your referendum is there. I mean, I don't know if she can win tomorrow, but I do like, Scott, that you've got the same sense that she's going to run an A race.
Yeah, I mean, the outside could be tricky, but I think for the kind of race she wants to run, I don't think she ideally would want to be on the lead. So being out there at least will give Ricardo some options.
Yep.
So if she's ready to fire, I think she's got it in her from that outside post to work out a good trip.
Excellent. All right.
The next play of significance would be the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Big scratch, obviously, with Laurel River coming out. I had him pick for second. But I'm going to lean on key horse and number three, Pipeline, who I just think is getting or has gotten good and getting better at the right time. Was kind of underwhelmed through the early part of this colt's career, but his last three efforts all very good, including the four go, which I'm battling early with Jackie's Warrior, probably not ideal. And ran a career best despite that. So I think Pipeline will appreciate the two-turn, 1 mile trip at Keeneland, be prominent early, and probably benefits from a horse like Laurel River coming out, who was going to be another one that was going to be amongst the early brigade. So I'll be leaning on Pipeline in the Breeders' Cup Third Mile.
Got a little bit of a work note and through the binoculars lean from Dave Grenig in the last hour, too.
Excellent. Excellent to hear. Yeah, appears to be doing well. Always good to hear someone like Dave being on a horse as well from a binoculars perspective. The Breeders' Cup Mile, I think, might be a little more wide open than just Modern Games. And I'm going to build tickets around Regal Glory, the mare taking on the girls. I don't know if there's going to be one better, perhaps, maybe two, but I think she's the likeliest to run her race. Very forgivable effort, losing to an Italian who basically walked on the lead for a grade one in the First Lady. I thought Regal Glory made a good run out of her considering the 23-1, 47 flat pace. So she's my top pick. I am going to use both horses that exit the Keeneland Turf Mile. Annapolis did have the perfect trip, but and probably won't get a similar trip from the 11 hole, but he's got so much upside. I don't know, you know, his tactical speed may allow him, with that combination of having Irad Ortiz aboard as usual, he may be able to work out a better trip than it might look from that post. And I thought Order of Australia, who obviously likes this turf course, was interesting. I didn't think he had the cleanest trip, but I thought he ran well. And if he's going to offer double-digit value, I don't want to get beat by him. And I'm going to use domestic spending as well. I really struggled to figure this out. But the fact that Chad bringing this horse back in this spot, I mean, he must think he's ready to roll. So I'm going to try to beat the favorites. I respect Modern Games. I was a little bit concerned that maybe he ran too big in the Woodbine Mile and may never get back to that effort. Maybe he's just better than these. I don't know.
Well, in terms of Order of Australia, I'm sure you'll be pleased to hear that Nick Luck expects Order of Australia to run
excellent,
run fine. And you know, that's a horse you might look up at the board and see at 20-1 and say, you know, how do I not do something with a horse like this? Regal Glory, it's so hard for me not to love Regal Glory. My long friendship with Paul Pompa, it's impossible not to root for her. And I think that you're going to get a better price than you might have expected, you know, had a couple different things gone her way over the course of the campaign. But, I mean, Chad, you know, Chad's presence in here is really strong. And you know, domestic spending is some horses from out there, 14 hole, you just say, ugh, you know, that dooms him. He's gonna drop out anyway. And
right.
I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, if he's sitting 11th early, he might have been what, 9th early if he had drawn inside. What's the difference? So I'll rely on Flavian Pratt to work out a trip. You know, I think he's more likely to be, you know, included underneath than to win. Under the circumstance, but I think Chad really, I'm actually amazed that his presence in this race hasn't been more celebrated leading up to tomorrow.
Just knowing Chad, it just doesn't feel like a move that he would make unless he felt really good about where this gelding is. And I agree, the post doesn't worry me all that much. I think you should get an honest pace if you've got a rider that's going to be well studied on how the race should play out and what to do from that far outside post at Flavian. So definitely an interesting wild card for sure that I don't know if he'll get overlooked at all, but I think he'll be rolling late one way or another. And then the last couple stronger pins, you know, the Distaff, I respect the heck out of Nest and Malathot. I just don't see the major separation from the rest of the field like the tote board is likely to suggest. So I am going to play against them in horizontals. I know I can get beat, but their value, I think, is there. I did land on Clarier, who I'm hoping gets overlooked because of that last effort and just kind of recency bias. But if we look back not too far, I remember Clarier out kicking Malathot twice to the wire. So I can put a line through the personal ensign. I've always been a big fan of Clarier. I think she'll come running. And I think Search Result is going to run a race. Whether she can get it, am I on an eighth against grade one competition and close the deal, unlike the personal ensign, that remains to be seen. But I think she might be as likely as anybody to hit the board in here. And I'm not going to let her beat me at what should be a pretty good price.
We may end up, I mean, obviously we're going to be excited to watch Flightline and all that and how things unfold in the Classic. But there's a real chance that by Saturday night when we're having dinner and running everything over in our heads, that the race that we're going to really say, you know, came through and was as fabulous as we had hoped is going to be that Distaff.
It's fun. It really is. And I think there's a number of contenders more than the Pletchers who I respect quite a bit. I just think that there's more to it than just those two. And then the last push I have, Steve, is in the turf. And respect the Europeans, respect Warlike Goddess. But I like a bomb in here. I really think number 8 Masterpiece is going to run a huge race. He's got a good effort over this course in the past.
Wow.
I've always been high on him out in Southern California, and there is just very little speed. And I think the way the race will play out, I think this horse is going to be up closer to the pace than it may look on his past performances and get first run on a lot of horses in here. So I'm taking a big swing in the turf with Whitey and Tyler Gaffleone on number 8 Masterpiece.
That's a clever opinion, and certainly anybody that looked at the figures, you know, in this race saw very clearly that Masterpiece has maintained his form as a 6-year-old and, you know, puts him squarely from a figure strength perspective. And one of the things that's nice about him is that he's pretty tactical. He can be,
right.
he can be placed in a couple of different spots. So, that's a very interesting opinion. 20-1, you're going to get every bit of 20-1, and you know, not to take away from Abel Cedillo, who's won on him, or Drayden Van Dyke, and anybody else, Rosario Castellano, Lascano, and he's own, you know, he doesn't win a ton. He's 6-for-19 coming in. However, Gaffleone, really the right kind of guy.
Yes.
You know, to hook up with Masterpiece. I'm glad you brought him up.
And Michael McCarthy's not coming here for the bourbon, but to bring this horse here.
Much respect for him.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now I've gone back and taken a second look because I've kind of gone over him a little bit. But, you know, he threw that win in the Eddie Reed. And like you said, he's got a win over the course. And, you know, this race to me is absolutely wide open. I'm not 100. First, I like Warlike Goddess earlier in the week, and then the more I look, I go, yeah, you know, she could win, but I'm not. The Europeans don't jump off the page at me, so I'm entertaining. I'm glad that you mentioned someone off the wall here. Give me a second look.
I'm more than happy to be a hero. I really am.
Well, you know, on the pace front, the horse that horse nobody's talked about is Bye Bye Melvin, who you know is going to light out. And, you know, is going to be on the lead from the inside under Fergal Lynch. And, you know, Warlike Goddess came and got him in the Joe Hirsch. But that portion of the turf equation makes a lot of sense. Scott Shapiro, best of luck. Get lucky out there. And thanks to everybody at Twin Spires and BrizNet for all the great information and contributions leading up to these two exciting days.
Yeah, thank you. Good luck to both of you guys. And, yeah, not too late to get the package on BrizNet. So much good information to be had there for sure, in addition to the promotions on Twin Spires.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Shap 34 on your Twitter. And keep tabs on the Scott's action. And this is an overdue pleasure. I think one other time, Fanny Simon, welcome, and thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Bonjour.
Bonjour. Ça va?
Ça va très bien, merci. How are you all doing this fine morning?
Well, getting ready for the action, and you know, for those that have watched over the years, I mean, you've been on camera off and on for so many different different outlets, including.
Well, this year I'll be helping the folks at the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I also did some international reporting for XBTV.
Sure.
And I just finished a documentary for the Aga Khan Studs, celebrating 100 years of the Aga Khan Studs since the grandfather of the actual Aga Khan bought his first yearling in Europe.
Wow.
His first sets of yearlings, actually.
Very cool. Where's that going to appear?
It's available for private screening on the Aga Khan Studs website. I can provide a link if anybody actually is interested. You can find me on Twitter. Where is Fanny is my handle, and I'll be happy to forward that.
Well, Fanny is right here, and those of you that have heard Fanny's insights and approach, I mean, remind everybody about your background, because it's kind of interesting. probably
I don't fit in a box, do
no,
I?
No, you don't. You've got kind of a crazy background.
Where do we start? I guess I was an exchange student. I come from Deauville, France, which is Lexington's sister city. And I was very fortunate after high school. I was offered the opportunity to come to the States to study at the University of Kentucky. And my parents said, no way, you graduate from France first, and then you do what you want. So they let me come for what they thought was 1 year, which ended up being 4 years to life. and I've been enjoyed it very much. Since I had a professor at the University of Kentucky who wanted to gear me towards television, and I was dead set on being a print reporter and print only, and he tricked me into doing an internship, and I agreed to prove him that he was wrong, and I've been doing TV ever since. That was, I think that was May of 94, so I started interning at WTVQ, and Kenny Rice was then the sports director.
Unbelievable.
So how lucky was I to work with Kenny, and after a month, they hired me as a video editor, and then I was associate news producer, and then the French Racing Channel was getting started in France, Equidia, so I went over there to help them, and I always kept a foot in this country, coming back and spending as much time as I can. I've been lucky to be able to cover American racing for the Europeans, European racing for the Americans and the rest of the world, spent some time in Dubai as well, and Hong Kong and Japan, and I mean, you know, getting paid to go to the races. It's a dream life, isn't it?
Well, and growing up as a girl in Deauville, it obviously one of the most majestic courses in the world. I mean, your equine interest started...
Oh, it started very early on. My grandparents were teachers. My mother and aunts, everybody in my family is a teacher. So I sidetracked. But my grandparents came to Deauville when they were yearlings, actually. And the one thing to do was to go to the races in the summer. So my great-grandparents went to the races. My great-grandfather took pictures. He actually got pictures of Rita Hayworth at the races. Which is Josephine Baker, and they just, you know, that's what they did. So my grandparents took me to the races, and of course I had to study because they were teachers, so I would do my summer school with them, and if I was good and if I had worked well on my arithmetics, I would be allowed to go to the sales, and if I worked extra well, I would be allowed to go to watch horses train in the morning, and that was fantastic. And when I was about 6 years old, I remember seeing nothing. It was foggy. One of these foggy mornings, like we had yesterday on the track. and you couldn't see anything, but you could hear the horses coming. You could hear their hooves. You could hear them blowing. You saw the seagulls coming out because we're very close to the sea. And then you saw the horses. And I was 6 years old, and I said, I'm not sure what that is, but that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Unbelievable. And here it is, years later, and you've had just a fascinating, fascinating life and career. And your association with this event, certainly, the opportunity to track the European runners. We had Nick Luck in the last hour as well. Talk a little bit about how you generally approach the outfits that come, what you find the formula for success to generally be for the imports.
Well, I think it's a combination, because you want the horse to be peaking and not have done too much earlier in the season. Of course, traveling is very important, how they recover from traveling. Sometimes, and it may not be the case as much as we're going to level the field in reducing the medication, but sometimes the medication in the past would come into effect. But sometimes you also see some horses coming from under the radar because they thrive here. All of a sudden, they come to a new environment. Instead of being in an outfit with 150 other horses where they all go in sets in the morning, some of them are there alone with a traveling lad and a groom and the trainer. They get extra attention and they love it. Talismanic was like that. He was just loving it. Malavat absolutely loves being on the road, and she's traveled well again. As a two-year-old, she wasn't freighting at all, and we just saw her yesterday on the turf, and she was bucking and bouncing and happy as could be. She's under the radar. If you're looking for good odds,
she's not under the radar anymore. Between you and Kelly Riley and Nick Luck, the fact that she came here last year, finished a very good second.
Oh, she was, yes.
That's the kind of thing. And it's funny, Talismanic, you referencing that win, and a horse that was just, nobody was, Caracanti.
To Santa Anita, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember, yes.
Especially with the bad post.
Dome driver.
Ooh, yes. I had.
Fanny, let me ask you this. The ground. How much does that play into deciding to bring a horse? Because I know, as a handicapper over here, we look and we see the soft and we see, stuff we don't see over here.
That's the thing with Keeneland. For Santa Anita, some trainers in Europe will go, we're not going to Santa Anita because it's going to
too
be
firm.
golf course
yeah.
type of turf.
Right.
If their horses are not fit for it, they're not coming. They're targeting it because they want good ground, good fast ground. The problem with Keeneland is you don't know until the week of, because we remember the 2015 Breeders' Cup here. I mean, it was soggy. Tepin loved it, absolutely loved it. But here you don't really know. So I can tell you about one horse I think will like this Tuesday for Aidan O'Brien. I think she didn't like the ground in the opera on Arc Day. I think she didn't get a nice trip. I mean, she didn't have the best of trip in the Prix Vermeil before that. I spoke with Dean Gallagher, who's her exercise rider, former jump jockey, great, great, great horseman. And he's saying she's in peak form, and I have a tendency to trust him when he says these things. He doesn't say it lightly.
I actually picked Tuesday. I'm delighted to hear that.
We agree on many things.
So far, very much. Tuesday has that feel. The O'Brien barn has been... The success has been spotty the last couple of years. I mean, we go to the crazy trifecta in the mile here 2 years ago, but otherwise, the O'Brien juggernaut has been slow to some degree. She feels like the right kind that does well here.
And the thing is, too, if you come here with a horse that's raced too much, it could be a big ask. Plus, there's so much happening on track. They're trying to preserve them from that a little bit, but there's so much happening on the track. It's so different. If the horses are tired, it's a big ask, and it's hard. Although, Aiden's horses are usually hardened horses, but I like to see a horse who's showing improvement but hasn't been on the merry-go-round all year.
Well, and that was always, for so many, many years, the knock on the arc, the horses that contested the arc, and how we never, you know, we didn't have an arc Breeders' Cup winner for the longest time.
So hard.
Because, you know, there was a period where there was a bunch of horses. Godolphin was guilty of this too, bringing over horses as an afterthought. Mm-hmm. Well, they're running; it's big money. Let's go.
They're in good shape. They came out of the race. Okay, why not?
Exactly, and that philosophy, it seems, has morphed as well. They've changed that approach has changed.
And also consider the configuration of the track. A horse that does well at Longchamp, which is a huge wide track, coming to Keeneland.
Tighter.
Which is much, much tighter. I mean, it's no comparison.
Well, and Enable, it's funny, we don't think of it as much as we should, but Enable's double. That's one of the great accomplishments and one of those great moments in the event's history.
Tell you who I loved, and unfortunately I wasn't here because it was a COVID year, and I screamed and probably woke up the whole neighborhood next to me, was Tarnawa. Tarnawa, I loved her going, because I knew that she was actually peaking at the time. The year before. She was that type of horse. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, not at all. That's fine. Let me get a couple of opinions and let you kind of riff a little bit, Fanny, at some other spots. Because the European, the international set is the mystery for a lot of our players.
Sometimes for us too. There's a great horseman, Alec Head, who passed away, unfortunately, in June. I was lucky to be an intern at his farm when I was a teenager, and he was in his 70s already. Bear in mind, this man had won the Epsom Derby before he was 30 years old. And he's telling you, I learn about horses every day, and there's nothing like a racehorse to make you look like a fool. And I always remember that. When people ask me for, you know, tips or bets, I'm always cautious because, you know, you open your mouth and the horse is going to prove you wrong.
More times than not, right?
Well, it's more, and that's one of the differences between the punditry from an international basis and domestically. I mean, we're for the most part, we're giving selections and you know, specific race analysis, and it's one of the things that, you know, we learned from Kate Miller, when you know, Kate was our Euro correspondent for, you know, several years until she left William Hill, and then we lucked into Nick Luck. Ollie Bell has joined us and others, and of course from Australasia, Andrew Hawkins, you know, last week.
Oh, Andrew is wonderful.
Leading into
such a passionate
Melbourne Cup. Well, that
horse
result,
reporter and horse man, because he's becoming
much,
you know,
exactly those approaches is more, you know, the course side of things and condition and you know, more of a amorphic approach to, you know, just how a horse is coming up to a race.
I think it depends on the individual as well. I'm not much of a bettor personally, so I don't have that experience, and I wouldn't be a good tipster. And I've got a journalism background. I come from a family of teachers, so usually it's, you know, where's the proof? Where's the data? What, you know, what do you have to substantiate what you're saying?
The barns you admire most, and we obviously the big, you know, you mentioned Alec Head and the O'Brien and Appleby and all that, but Graffard, for instance, and, you know, some of the smaller outfits that you think people, that North American players should know more about and respect when they come with a horse.
Rafe Beckett. You can never disregard a horse coming from Rafe Beckett's yard. He's got King Ross in the mile. And I like that horse on the mile because I think he will like the tighter
configuration.
And sometimes, because I've heard Frankie say that over and over again, and John Gosden has said that too, that sometimes when the courses are tight, It doesn't matter if the horse is not of the distance. It favors a horse that who has speed. So Frankie was saying yesterday that a horse like King Ross, it's probably better at 7/8 of a mile, but that will fit him better here than if it was a true mile on a European course.
Or the straight, you know, where the
straight, like we have in Deauville, for example. One of my favorite races, the Prix Jacques Le Marois, has provided many a Breeders' Cup mile winner. Thinking of Miesque and Goldikova in recent years.
That counts for five.
Yeah, already.
Well, I tell you what, that's clean information. You say you don't go to the windows much, you're just giving it the way you see
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
That means that's big. So
I like to give attribution, too. You know, I think Frankie's opinion is probably more valuable than Fanny's opinion, but I like to listen and tell the stories.
Fanny, before I let you go, the one horse that there's extremes, the pendulum is swinging back and forth about where he is career-wise, you know, and obviously the relevance for tomorrow. And you want to talk about international, towering international figures, John Gosden and Mishriff. What's your take on Mishriff's being here?
I never disregard a choice that's been made by John Gosden. Mm. John Gosden is a master. He's not just a master in European training. He was a trainer here in the States.
You bet.
He knows how things work. And of course, it's the last race. I think they're very aware that it's a very competitive race and that they may not look like, you know, they're the number one choice, but you get Frankie on a horse riding for John Gosden. They've got to be in your trifecta somewhere, you know.
That's fair. And since we brought up Gosden and you're bringing up Frankie, I'll let you close with the other Gosden. And this is going to be a short price, and the Nashua's involvement here, and let Holly Doyle, because you know, as big as Julie Crone was, and Rosie Napravnik was kind of a comet, you know, for a short period of time.
But she did really well as a comet.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
She really did. Winning those Group 1 races, the one that mattered, you know, the Distaff, the Oaks.
Absolutely. 100%. Holly Doyle is, adored. Just, and I don't think the American audiences realize how much she is just revered.
She's revered, but rightfully so, and people might see a woman jockey. She's a top jockey. She is in the top 10, maybe top 5 jockeys that we have. She's a top jockey who happens to be a woman.
Exactly.
But that's my take on it. And she rides, she's strong, which is not, you don't always see that strength in women jockey. She also has a good hand. She reads races really well. She's a really hard worker. And she can push horses. You know, sometimes, I remember Olivier Pellier saying that sometimes you just push horses more than you think you can. And she can do that. Her ride on the Platinum Queen in the Abbey when they won. I mean, that was amazing. The filly, the 2-year-old filly against older sprinters. She had the weight advantage, but still, you need to make sure that you give her a good ride, and she seems to be doing well still.
People are making that big of a deal about the 2-year-olds against older. I think it's just phenomenal.
And it's phenomenal.
She has two good races. She lost to the one
high
of the
field,
one of the,
High Field Princess.
That's one of the picks in the other race, and then she wins the other one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's incredible. We don't do that here. We don't have the 2-1-up. I think it was one race Humphrey wrote 2-1-up, the Rocket Man at Calder.
Oh, wow.
When they had that extreme day.
Yeah. Yes.
But it would never happen. It would be somebody would say, you have a misprint in your condition book. That can't be.
But, you know, Holly won the French Oaks with Nashua, and she won the Abbey. She's really, again, a top rider. And I do believe in her chances with both the Platinum Queen and Nashua. Now, in that another horse who might be flying under the radar a little bit, and that would be a wonderful story if he won, is Persian Force.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Lacey is the director of the sales here at the Breeders' Cup. His brother, Barry Lacey, bred Persian Force in County Offaly, Ireland. And their father was a trainer. a trainer who actually gave a leg up to the late and much regretted Pat Smullen. Right. So you're talking, you know, a great story of horse people. Actually, Frances, who's Pat Smullen's wife, is here for the Breeders' Cup. And, yeah, I think I'll be pushing for Persian Force.
Well, you bring that up. And, of course, Brendan Walsh, very one of his best friends.
I've never met somebody who didn't have a good thing to say about Pat Smullen. So we're thinking about him.
The same can be said about Fanny Simone. There's nobody that has a bad thing to say about Fanny Simone.
Well, thank you very much. You're way too kind.
Fanny, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
A delight. And where is Fanny? With the Y, right? It's not with an I. It's not an IE.
F-A-N-N-Y.
I just became your newest follower.
Thank you very much.
We've been following Fanny for a long time. Fanny, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Happy Breeders' Cup Day to you all and to everybody listening.
Fanny Simone, everybody who you've seen in one presentation after another. Hammer, we've got exactly 26 minutes. Mike Welch is going to swing through here shortly. And we got to get a call into Popo as well. I want Jim. You never heard from Jimmy?
No.
All right. So no Jimmy. Run through your picks.
Okay. Like I said, I wrote numbers down, so I have them. Let's start with today. I was going to say Friday. We're at Friday.
Real quick,
Juvenile Sprint. I'll just give the first three. I'm on 4-2-12. Dramatized on top of Love Reigns. And, of course, the Platinum Queen I got in Cure. I mean, you know, these might necessarily be in some kind of order, but I'm looking for a little price. Like I landed on Dramatized there. What do we cut next? The Juvenile Fillies. I count as I'm doing this, I'm counting Chop Chop and 10. The 10, Chocolate Gelato, kind of is the same horse. I'm not going to play one and not the other. So I like those two a little bit. I like You're My Girl. We mentioned her. I think she showed some guts last time. And then the Sabra Tough as a bomb in there.
Underneath.
There that race could have some crazy action in it. That horse that I can't get that horse Spirit Gal out of my mind that Sid mentioned. I did a little research on there. I'm gonna use her. I like the light a little bit. Went back and watched her race. She looked fantastic on the race over the track here. Midnight Mile as well, and Mediate. Those are the four there I have. In the Juvenile, I'm 3-4, 3-4-5, Cave Rock, I'm going. I've seen that movie a few times, and I'm not going to try and...
No, that's
not
fair.
I'm not going to sneak into another theater.
That's a good line.
This horse here, after watching, this is my best. I've finally come to a best bet that I like today. And in the last day, and that's And the Winner Is. After watching a lot of horses in that race last night, that was the most impressive performance that I saw. Wayne Catalano's colt. So I like And the Winner Is. I'm on a 6-4-2-1 in that bunch. I'm going to throw in the Zuma Beach horse, Pax the Wallop, who looked good as well. But the And the Winner Is just kind of jumped out of the TV at me last night. When I was watching his race, as we go into Saturday, you know, the first race we have that Arabian Night Maiden of Baffert, and he looks pretty good. He's going to be 3-5, but if you're starting to pick five, you know, maybe it makes it a pick four. I don't know. Filly and Mare Sprint. I have trouble getting off of Cece. I don't know. She's done the same thing she did last year. She's heading into this race. It's 7/8. People have been ignoring her, and that puts a smile on my face. Maybe she's going to go up to 6-1. Good night, Olive. I can't you know overlook her. But I come up with 4/11/8 in there with Edgeway as being, if you're doing a superfecta, that she just kind of hangs around. So she's the one that's on a little bit of the outsider. Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Anyway, I went back to handicapping 101. Why don't bet a horse that's never done something that you're trying something new.
Yep.
So, you know, Wesley Ward, I start and end with him. So I'm actually picking Arrest Me Red over, I'm 7/8 over Golden Pow. I mean, it's what these two horses do. they've won a ton of races doing this, and, you know, not worried about them making a turn or going longer or shorter. This is what they do. Wesley does this. This is his home, his ballywick. So I'm 7.863 in there. This mile race, it's just driving me crazy with all the scratches and changes. I'm going to stick with my first gut, and that was Cody's Wish. I mean, it almost looks, I hope he's going to get bet down a little bit more than I'd like, but that's the way it goes. I'm 7.5110 in there. If looking for the meltdown with Buscador and then Slow Down Andy just becomes, looks a little bit better each time they take a horse out. So we'll take the 30-1 on him. Filly Amer Turf. I rode up. I did it with my Aunt Italian. Didn't really like the news that Nick Luck brought with Toy maybe being a so-called rabbit out there to chase her around. But I think if she can get out there on her own and take it easy, the better. Or if she has to turn up the gas a little bit early and discourage them that way, I'm still sticking with Aunt Italian. Tuesday in there, and then above the curve, so I'm 11.54 in there. Breeders' Cup Sprint, Jackie's Warrior. Once Jack Christopher opted out, I mean, I think it's his time to shine. Steve has just been on an absolute roll lately. He knows how to get. He does great on big days, and this is obviously one of the biggest days out there. So I'm Jackie's Warrior. I like the one mod, the Elite Power, that's going to sneak under the radar a little bit. I'm 9.64 with the American Theorem, and then Aloha West. I'm not throwing him out of the picture completely. I could see him sneaking up there.
I've added Aloha West as sort of the, you know, the B, kind of a B minus. Catalano's very clever,
and he's, you know, he's a little under the radar, although when you talk to him and see him, you know, out and about, he's not, but he is a darn good trainer, and he, you know, won the race last year, and he knows what to do. The mile, very tough stuff, and I had this written down before we had Fanny, but I'm leaning Kinross. I'm 11.9. I'm going Europeans on the top, 11.9, which is Malabath is second, and then I got smooth is straight in there because this horse just runs his race every time. Modern Games, I'm hearing a lot of, especially from the people that know, just the trip back and forth and this and that, and, you know, it's going to be a low price. So, I mean, I got him in there a little bit, but I'm 13.954 in there. The Distaff, very tough to separate. Like you said, this could be a super race. I'm Malathat. I think this is her, being the older filly. I'm her. Again, Clarier, I've been a big Clarier fan. I still am a big Clarier fan. The old one bad race, you know, knock her off the train. I that's great. The price is going to drift up on her. So I'm 1.467 in there. The Turf, tough event. And once again, I'm going to do what I've done before. Mostly I go to the Europeans again. I came up with Broom. I've got a lot of Aiden O'Brien action in here, and I'm hoping he you know, explodes on the day. But I'm Broom. I'm four, and then Mishriff. I'm using him. I'm hearing too much good things about him if he runs his race. But that goes for all of them. But I'm 4.11.52 in here. The Classic, I'll take the over 6.5 lengths. And that's the way I see that. So there you go. And of course, as you know, as the day moves on and you need to cash a bet or what's left in your pocket, you might be looking for a little bit of a price as they change, which is one reason I try to do the rolling pick threes as a base here, my wagering on these days, because it keeps me on top of what's going on. If you happen to be live in the third leg, you can back up. And like you said earlier, you're watching the board a little bit more, and you happen to see that horse that you thought was going to be 8-1, and he's 17-1. You can go ahead and load up. And Scott said something very, very important to take a step back. Don't forget to bet a horse to win here. We got gimmicks galore, horizontals, verticals. you like a horse at 6, 7, 8 to 1, there's nothing wrong with, you know, putting a few bucks to win on them, and especially if they're in the 20s and 30s to 1. Go ahead. Bet it across the board. A horse finishes third, you're going to get your money back. Go back to basics a little bit and don't try to get fancy. Pick your fancy spots, but, you know, take a deep breath and try and go back to basics. And, you know, that's where I'm at after all the help we've gotten from the many super people we've had on here. And I know the listeners are you know, just thankful for that. And you know, I'm excited myself to be here in Lexington at a racetrack instead of going to a meeting. This is my first Breeders' Cup here. And like I talked to Ben Huffman yesterday, and I said, "Oh, this is great." I go, "You should have it here more often." He goes, "You don't understand. I've been here 30 years. There's not supposed to be a leaf on the tree. It's supposed to be 40 degrees and drizzling." He goes, "I don't know what's going on." He goes, "This is the nicest November day I've ever seen in my life." So
they are. It was like 7 years ago when it rained Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then you had a Chamber of Commerce Friday and Saturday. Very, very funny. Happy to bring Capo back with us. We talked earlier in the week, and the Form to Win chartings are up for the big races today. We want to get a couple of opinions from Saturday as well, now that Papo's had a chance to do the snapshots. And again, you know, there's still plenty of time. Go to the website, stevepick.com. Right there, you can download the guide that we put together, and lots of opinions and lots of play ideas, $100 budgets, and thanks to Form to Win and AmWager for that support to put the guide together again this third year in a row. Papo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Papo, any final thoughts about the Friday card before we talk about tomorrow?
There's some price horses that were in the mix on Form to Win that I'd include in race six. That Sharp As Attack, the number 9 horse, that on Form to Win, I'd probably mess around with her underneath. In race 7, the 8 horse Atomically, at 12 to 1, absolutely fit.
Nice.
In race 8, Last Call, the 3 horse at 20 to 1, you may want to include underneath on the verticals. Race 9, Blazing 7's the 6, and the number 5 horse Verifying absolutely fit also. And then in race, in the final, in the nightcap race 2, Paxawalloff was the top rated horse on Form to Win.
Now, and has got plenty of love from every perspective. All right, let's get into the Saturday action, Papo. And did anything? First of all, did anything shock you when you did the chartings?
A couple horses moved up and moved down. Steve, the first one I'd like to mention is in the sprint. American Theorem, No Matter How I Ran It, was the top horse. Not sure how to explain it, but he was the top horse. And then when I went back and looked at Jackie's Warriors PPs, I mean, he hasn't gone 22-44 this year except once in the mud. He's been going 22-45, so he's gotten a little bit loose. Not saying he can't win, but price play is definitely American Theorem. And then in the distaff, search results was the top pick. Form to Win.
Yeah.
It pushed, the key here, Steve, is it pushed Nest really down. Didn't have her anywhere near the top 4 or 5 horses.
Wow.
So I'll go deep in that race. It, like search results, Clarier, Malathat, and Blue Stripe. I mean, the price plays Blue Stripe, but for the Maltese, I'm going to go 4 deep in that particular race. And I'm not going to use Nest, who I think will be the favorite. The Classic was interesting, depending if you ran it at 9 furlongs to 10 or just 10. You know, if you just ran it at 10, it would limit the sample sizes for some of those horses. It was obviously Flightline and then Epicenter. If you change it from 9 furlongs to 10, you know, Flightline didn't have a start at 9 furlongs because he only had that one start at 10. But Olympiad was moved up tremendously, as well as Taba. So, that one you're going to have to do some more work in. I do think that Epicenter still has another move forward. He did win his last race geared down. So I don't know if you can beat the chalk in that race, but, you know, maybe some straight exactus. I do like, I think Olympiad will be a good value pick. He's only really had one bad race this year. He's run a couple fours on the Ragusans as well. So maybe try to sneak that horse in underneath.
Any other spots for tomorrow that...
The mile is the race where I'm going to take some shots. Staying with Pogo, who I talked about on Tuesday. Dream Loper, Modern Games, and then Ibar absolutely fit on form to win as well. And then in the that dirt mile, Cody's Wish absolutely fit on form to win. So did Cyberknife, and then Simplification was a little weird because on the filter I used, it was pulling up his races from a mile and mile and 16th that were earlier in the year, and I think he's made a move forward since then. So I'm going to use him as the value play.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. The biggest surprise then is, and I wonder if Nest, you know, by virtue of her involvement in the Belmont and in the Alabama, if, you know, those distance races, you know, make her look, quote unquote, slower in the algorithm.
Those races were not factored in, Steve. I took them out.
Wow. All right. So that's interesting, too.
Yeah, the filter I used was a mile and a 16th and to a mile and an eighth, and she was just not as fast on form to win.
Huh. Well, that's amazing, actually, then. Well, I'll look forward to later to play around with it. While we got you, anything else that players need to know, AmWager-wise, for the
weekend?
Yeah,
we're still running the $300 sign-up bonus. It's going to be available through the weekend, so that's still always a great way to get started. I encourage people to use form to win within AmWager itself, and I just encourage everyone to, you know, go into it with a budget, stick to your plays, and have fun.
Outstanding. Popo, I really appreciate it. Thanks to Form to Win and AmWager for helping us put together this year's At the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion for the third great year. Got another great reception. I know players appreciate it and appreciate these looks. Get lucky, and we'll talk next week and do some recapping.
Yeah, sounds great. You and Hammer have a great Breeders' Cup.
Popo Morales, everybody, and the team at Form to Win and AmWager. Still looking for Welsh, but Nick Tamaro is ready for us, so we'll get the final thoughts from Nick. There's Jay Pridman, but he looks so relaxed. He doesn't have anything to worry about. Certainly Nick Tamaro doesn't have anything left to worry about. The morning lines are in. They're not making you do any revised lines, are they, after the scratches?
Not to my knowledge, thank God, because by the time I get through this traffic jam to get into Keeneland, it might be time for the races.
Well, it is.
The Breeders' Cup races.
We're 10 minutes.
8 minutes, I suppose. Eight minutes.
Oh, yeah, no, I've already got down on the early pick five. Don't worry. But, yeah, the Breeders' Cup races might be on by then.
Yeah,
who do you have in the first leg? Just curious.
I kept it pretty obvious. I was mainly the 2, 6, and 8. So I didn't really have anybody beyond that. I'd have a small backup with the 9.
I'm 4, 6, and 8. So
you didn't use business model at all?
I used him as a backup, yeah. I just think he's going to have too much to do. But he's not. He's by no means impossible.
Interesting. Nick, let's get this. You know, we got a lot done, obviously, early in the week when we were going over the pace scenarios and you had certain leans. I mean, let me quickly ask about today. Was there anything that sort of changed? Any, the final analysis? Because it did seem, I know I saw David Aragona's comment, and I agreed with David. I ended up using some horses that I didn't expect to use and even picked a couple of horses that I didn't expect to pick at all. Anything like that for you today?
No, not terribly much. I mean, from before entry time, I wouldn't have expected Oxymore was going to run the Juvenile Turf Sprint, so I did end up picking him. I like Zajera in the Juvenile Phillies Turf, and I'm glad she's one slot in now with a scratch. She's still going to be wide. She's still going to have to be used early. But, you know, I sort of, in a tepid kind of way, want to favor forwardly placed horses in the turf races. Other than a race like the Turf Sprint, it looks like it just has too much speed. I worry a little at how much horses are really going to be able to pick up from way off of it. So no, nothing changed really from earlier in the week. I think as I did more work on the juvenile turf, I realized that Silver Knot just looks like he's a lot better than these horses. That's mainly because I think the American contingent is particularly weak. I don't think it's that he's a, you know, a huge standout, and I probably should have made him a little bit shorter price on the morning line. So that's about sums it up. I'm still on Chop Chop, and I'll use Atomically and a couple of other horses that can make up ground in the juvenile fillies.
Very good. How about Saturday? How about a quick run-through with some final thoughts?
I mean, you know, Hot Pepper's coming out of the Philly and Mare turf does decrease the amount of speed in there, but I'm still on Obligatory. I Can't Stop Now. With Slammed having the inside post and still having horses that want to be forward in there, like Echo Zulu and Lady Rocket, in addition to horses that want to chase like Edgeway, there should be more than enough pace, and that should set her up. She's, you know, if I was to make a best bet of the day, so to speak, it would definitely be her. I picked Casa Creed in the turf sprint. I know he's going to have to hustle. It's 5.5, and he's likely to get badly outsprinted early by Golden Pal and some of the other speed, but his best races are clearly good enough. And there's only two horses in the race other than Golden Pal that you can say if they run their best, they can win. And that's Casa and Highfield Princess. So I'll take the better price of that pair. The Dirt Mile obviously loses some luster without Laurel River. It also hurts the price on Cyberknife. And I like Cyberknife. I think as far as multi-race bets go now, I'll use Pipeline and Cyberknife and a little bit of Cody's Wish, and that'll probably be it. I'm going to be against Gnight. If he wins, hats off to him. I don't love the quick turnaround, and I'm expecting him to probably take a little bit of a step backwards. The Philly and Mare turf is a really tricky race. I picked Tuesday, who I think got the wrong ride last time and was a little too forward. I love Ryan Moore getting back on. She's probably a little more geared towards more ground, but I'm wondering if Toy is in there to push the issue a little bit early.
Oh,
and
without
and
a doubt.
Happens,
without a doubt.
Yeah, if that happens, then I think things really set up. I also think that helps above the curve, who'll be a little bit more patiently ridden after Nashville was kind of made a big middle move last time out.
Well, we had Nick Luck, and he addressed the Toy situation because I picked Tuesday too, Nick, and it just really feels like the type that has been successful in this race for O'Brien, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right, right. One of those where it's not so much that she's here as an afterthought. She's here because she really knocked heads with some good horses. She ran in good races and ran well, and this is just a logical spot for her to cap her campaign. So I'm looking forward to that race very much. I think the sprint obviously is not as interesting as it could have been. I'm going to play CZ Rocket to get into the number. He ran very well in this race a couple of years ago, and I'm not as concerned about him running without Lasix now that he ran well last time at Santa Anita. He's going to have to get some help, obviously, to win, but I think if he can slide in there at a big price in some of the exotics, getting Pratt on there is notable. So he's a horse who I think could probably outrun his expectations. I'm going to play him underneath Kamari and Jackie. I don't have anybody else that's an interesting win candidate. I think Elite Power is a really good horse. I just wonder if this might be too much in a scenario where he's not really going to have things break his way quite as much. I'm really looking forward to the mile. I'm sort of captivated by the race. I think that anybody who's just conceding it to modern games is making a big mistake, because his last race was not nearly as good as the way he ran at Woodbine, and all of a sudden he's gotten, this schedule's gotten really tight, right? I mean, he came over, went back, ran a bit of a subpar race, kind of a ho-hum race by his standards, and now he's back 3 weeks later. It just seems like a lot to ask of a horse. So I'm going to use Regal Glory. I'm going to use Dreamloper. I don't really have anything against Kinross. I don't think he's drawn all that great, but he's getting no fanfare at all. And he's a much better horse than people are even saying.
Gets us to the late pick three with the Distaff, the Turf, and the Classic.
Yeah, I'm on Malathot in the Distaff. I'm going to use Clarier as well. I'll use Zanest as a backup. I just think Malathot and Clarier are better fillies than she is. And I think the setup will be there well enough. I don't trust a horse like Society to wire the field. I think Search Results is interesting from just off the pace, given that she's run well enough twice now to win. A mile and an eighth is probably just a little bit beyond her scope, but she still looks like a horse to me that's very, very interesting. As far as the turf goes, I picked Rebel's Romance. I think Red Knight is interesting as a long shot.
Ooh, second mention. Second mention of the morning.
You know, watch his last race. He got a lot of trouble early. He ended up getting into position and making really the only off-the-pace move. I know that field kind of came together in a bit of an ugly fashion, but this is a really rough bunch. This is not a particularly impressive field, and I think a horse like him at 25-1 or so, get a big piece of it, and everybody will start doing their work afterwards and realize, well, you know, he did actually make some sense. I have nothing clever in the classic. I'll play Flightline over Taba. I'll have a little bit on Taba and Epicenter to beat him. Anybody else wins, I'll have no chance.
Well, Nick, can't thank you enough. Let me close with one final question as they reach the gate for the opener of the weekend. What horse wins this weekend that guarantees you have a winning weekend?
Obligatory.
There we go. All right, that was your answer at the beginning of this whole process, and the answer at the end.
So Nick,
I'm going to ride that ship.
I am going to help you along with that, and she is a horse that has been my nemesis for years. If I bet on her, you can put a line through her, and if I don't, you can go to the window. So I am not even going to – I had her – I've crossed her off. I had her fourth. I'm not even going to put her in any of my tickets. So I don't want to be the guy that did it to you. And, you know, my wife thinks you think that stuff matters. Yes, it does. So I am not going to play her. So all you obligatory fans,
you're free and clear.
So
I'll tell you what, Hammer, that's what friends are for.
That's exactly right. And then you just wrap that up. I just literally put an X through it. It's gone. She's off my ticket. Good luck to you, and we'll see if it happens again. But I'm go for it.
I love it, Nick. I will see you at some point soon, and we will wish you the best of luck, Mike. Well, we got literally 30 seconds. I'm sorry we didn't get to it. Nope, don't worry about it. Get Mike your final thoughts. Your top three horses going into the weekend.
Well, I mean, obviously Flightline, not a betting proposition, but he's been terrific. I am going to take a shot on Blue Stripe tomorrow.
Nice.
I know it's a stretch on paper, but I just think she's doing so well. She's going to be a price. So, I've got to go there. And boy, a third one. Didn't mean to catch you so late. The traffic out there is horrible.
That's what everybody said.
Yeah, I like Rebel's Romance, too. I just like the way he's looked. I mean, I like him on paper, and I just love the way he's looked on the racetracks. I've seen him.
Nice.
And as far as anything else, I'm just looking through here real quick to see. I really haven't done a lot of handicapping for tomorrow. Real Glory has been terrific, too, in the morning.
Nice.
I have to take a look at him. Obviously, the sprint, Jackie's Warrior. In Italian, I think, too. Maybe Loose on the Lead could take a look at him. But Rougier is trained well as well. I don't know if she's good enough, but... She's training well. She'll be a price also.
Who's your favorite today, the two-year-olds?
You know, I really don't have a favorite. I mean, obviously, Cave Rock is the horse to beat. His stablemate, National Treasure, is training lights out, according to my clocker out there, and Sam with Blazing Sevens. So, I mean, if you're going to look to beat the favorite to get some value, Blazing Sevens or National Treasure would be the two I'd look at.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch. Still plenty of time to get the clocker report. Mike, thanks for everything.
You're welcome, Steve.
Mike Welch, and there it is. Mike Welch, Nick Tamaro, Papo Morales, Fanny Simon, a wonderful treat, Scott Shapiro, Dave Brennig, Marty McGee, Frank McGoey, and Nick Luck and Rick Hammerly. Thank you so much.
It's been a great, great week. Fab, let's go. Cash some tickets, everybody, and enjoy it.
If you missed anything, Casey, you'll have the archive and podcast up as soon as the production can go. And we will be back with you on Monday to start recapping everything. You've got your betting companion. Go to stevebick.com. It's there for you. My analysis for today is up. Gus's analysis available at BrizNet. Rich Eng's as well. Thanks to Casey for a great job back in the studio. Enjoy it, everybody. Bet liberally and cash often. Don't get frustrated. It only takes one. Thanks for tuning in all week. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few